County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100 ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why this December, we're launching a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than Nottinghamshire seam sensation, Dane Patterson. So Dane, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Well, so I'm in Port Elizabeth at the moment, training with the Warriors. A bit windy today, so had a bit of a gym session and then bowled a bit and then just had a bit of Pilates slash yoga, the rehab session with the physio. So yeah, that was my day today.
It's been a busy day then. I must admit, I can't say I've done the same in terms of physical exertion. Went for a little bit of a walk this morning. It was rather chilly, to be honest, here in Warwickshire, but hey. There's nothing like a bit of exercise, is there, Dane? It's really good, you know, refreshes the mind, doesn't it?
True, it does. Now that you can get out, especially, I see cases are climbing up there in England, and looks like Boris wants to knuckle down on some things.
Yeah, it's not ideal, to be honest. And to be fair, that is good advice, you know, just while you can, just, you know, enjoy yourself to the absolute maximum. You have to, especially in these tough times. But just for the listeners out there, today I'm going to be talking to Dane about his earliest cricketing memories in South Africa. Then a large chunk of the podcast for the Nottinghamshire fans out there will be about the East Midlands County. And then just to wrap up, Dane, we do have TCCP teammates, where we'll learn a little bit more about the characters that you share a dressing room with at Trent Bridge. But before we get into all of that good stuff then, I want to take you all the way back, transport you all the way back to the origin of the Dane Patterson cricketing journey. So, Dane, what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
Well, I could say my brother played cricket. So he's played back in the days when it was still under provinces. So he was playing for like Borland's Academy and things like teams like that. So we used to stay opposite the park. So there used to be a lot of guys that used to play cricket and soccer. And I mean, if Wimbledon was on, we used to make a court out of sand, like outlining with the sand and things like that. And we used to be playing tennis. So, I think I was at the age of 6 and I used to play cricket with them. And they were like 17, 18 years old. So I used to just running between them. And I think there was one day where I was irritating my brother. And I think I was like standing right in front of him and I said, I'm going to stand here. And he's like, no, I'm going to hit you with a ball. And then as true to his words, he hit me with the ball. And he said, since that day, he knocked some cricket sense into me. So he says, thanks to him, I got to where I am now. So yeah.
I'll tell you what, that is a very, very funny story in terms of your earliest cricketing memories. I like that. Was that a proper cricket ball as well, not a tennis ball?
Proper cricket ball.
With a helmet on?
A two-piece. Nah, no helmet.
What?
He said, he told his friend, I think his friend was bowling spin. It's like, told his friend where to pitch it. And I was like, yeah, I was laughing away. And then all of a sudden, back foot into my head. He's like... And then I ran off crying and he got a bollocking from my mother. And then obviously I got a bollocking afterwards also. So, yeah.
Just some words of wisdom for the young cricketers out there always remember your helmet and your box as well. Correct. As we learned from the Stuart Meeker podcast, never forget your box. Oh, goodness. I'm not going to repeat that story. But yeah, if you want to listen to that, it was a pretty gruesome injury, shall we say, to the Sussex and former Surrey Scene bowler. But you mentioned there your brother. So, Dane, I'm guessing there was definitely a family element to that early cricketing journey. But who in the world of professional cricket did you look up to, per se? Did you have any role models, any icons, influences in the professional game that you tried to emulate, per se?
Not try to emulate, but try to do what they do. I mean, I watched Sean Pollock, Glenn McGraw. I used to watch a lot of their bowling, and then Dale Steyn came onto the scene, and then watched a bit of him. Luckily, I could share a dressing room with him. Charles Langeveld too. So just watching those guys over the years, and then obviously this generation now watching Jimmy. Josh Hazlewood also. So like all those type of bowlers are not fast, but can hold their line and length. If you should wake them up and say, right, could you please eat this £1? And I'm sure they'll eat it. So, yeah, I mean, I've never used to be, okay, people say I used to be like the raw pace in high school and things like that. But as soon as I learned a skill, then that pace doesn't matter. I think owning a skill and watching Jimmy and Josh Hazlewood, I mean, those are the guys, like all the fast mediums. Even watching Vernon, I mean, I could watch him bowling at the net. And I mean, just like sharing a net with him, like you're just in awe and like thinking, like, how does he do that? How does he go about his business and things like that? So, yeah, those were the guys.
Well, I'll tell you what, some nice choices in there. I must admit, I'm glad you brought up Vernon Philander. You know, when you're mentioning that description, he immediately came to mind. Vernon was an absolute handful. He wasn't the quickest, was he? But always seemed to just be so consistent, so reliable, so accurate, as you mentioned, putting it on that penny piece. And he always used to get massive wickets. He really was an underappreciated bowler, in my opinion. Yeah. But with that being said, in that South Africa side, you did have a certain Dale Steyn. Just the 439 test wickets and Mornay Morkel as well, as if that wasn't enough. And even Kagiso Rabada more recently. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe that's why he sometimes flies under the radar. But in terms of those original three you mentioned, Dane, I'd love to know your answer to this. If you could have a net session with one of those first three bowlers, Glenn McGrath, Sean Pollock, and who was the other one? Was it Jimmy? It was Jimmy, wasn't it? Jimmy Anderson.
Yeah.
Right, if you could share a net with Glenn McGrath, Jimmy Anderson, or Sean Pollock, who would you choose and why for a two-hour-long session?
I probably won't invite them to a net. I'll probably sit them down in a pub and have a couple of pints with them. I think I'll pick up more value there than inviting them to a net session.
Okay, I'll flip the question. Let's say you can have a two-hour-long chat. I thought you could have, you know, watched them do what they do and, you know, picked up some experience from them. But, yeah, we'll do a two-hour-long chat, right? You've got 2 hours in a room with one of those absolute fast-bowling greats. Who would you choose and why?
That is a tough question. But all three of them, but if I had to choose one, it'll probably be Glenn McGrath. Probably, because I mean, at this stage, I can still watch Jimmy doing his thing. I mean, it's a pity he didn't play the first test on the Ashes. So, looking forward to watching him bowl the next test. So, I mean, it's just those back in the days, I think, where there were no DRSs and things like that, where cricket was a bit more harder, or not harder, but just decision-wising and things like that. I think I'd probably sit down with Glenn McGrath.
Fair choice. I've actually met Glenn McGrath, you know, in 2019 on the way to my Ashes seat at Edgbaston. It was absolutely incredible. It was
lucky.
I know, he even got a picture with him. So that's my claim to fame. And more recently, Jonathan Trott in 2021. But honestly, really, really nice guy, but an absolute handful as a bowler. Wasn't he? Yeah. 563 test wickets, Australia's second all-time leading test wicket taker behind only Shane Warne. What a bowler. Yeah. And I didn't watch the series live. I was a little bit too young for the series, but 2005 Ashes, his 500th wicket, getting Marcus Jaskothic at Lords, is iconic. Iconic.
Yeah.
Where better to get it than the home of cricket itself? Incredible. Yeah. So yeah, great choice, to be honest. I think, obviously, as an England fan, I might choose Jimmy Anderson. You know, there is that bias, but you can't really go wrong with Pidge, as he was known, or indeed Sean Pollock, a legend of my county, of Warwickshire. But
Warwickshire.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Just a word of warning for the listeners. If you are new to the podcast, I am indeed a Warwickshire fan. And yes, as you'll see throughout the podcast, there may be a few Bears references throughout today's show. But yes, I have actually had a chat with Dane before the episode. If I get too Warwickshire heavy, Dane is going to pull me up on it. So don't worry about that, listeners. But in terms of those role models, those influences, every single one of them seen bowlers, okay? None of them batsmen, none of them keepers, none of them spinners. So, Dane, I wanted to ask you, why did you become a seam bowler? Why didn't you become a batsman or a keeper or even a spinner, you know, unleash the inner Keshav Maharaj? Why did you become a seam bowler?
I think back in my days, I wanted to do everything fast because I was an athlete also. So I used to do hurdles and all the track events. And
were you any good?
I was.
Were you?
Yeah, so I would do athletics and cricket in summer at school, and then winter time I would play a bit of rugby just to keep fit. So I wanted to do everything fast, and spin wasn't really my forte. And I think I just, whenever I used to play on the street, I would bowl fast. So I'd never spin the ball or anything. I'd just run and bowl. So I think back in the day, playing street cricket and park cricket, I think that's where I basically made my mind up. Okay, I want to be like this. I want to be like this person and just go with it.
It's probably for the best in South Africa as well, isn't it, to be a seamer as opposed to a spinner? Because aside from Kingsmead in Durban, it's not exactly the most spin-favourable country. When you look at the Wanderers, Newlands, for example, just to name a couple, they definitely seem dominant. And I have to ask, Dane, what is your favourite bit about seam bowling? In terms of the art form itself, what is it that you enjoy so much? What do you find so addictive about the art of seam bowling?
So getting now to my older stages, I think thinking a lot more about dismissals, thinking about fields and all that, just playing with the batsman's mind, just gives you that oomph, that kind of aura as a bowler. I was actually doing it today in the nets with one of the batters, and he said, "What were you trying to do?" So I said, "You were just trying to lob me down to third man, have an easy single." And I just said, "I'm going to put a gully in, and my fine leg and deep square is going to be very round." And he didn't know what to do, so I just told him, "That's your other option for looking for a single. So it's not only that option, it's for you to find another option for a single." So he's like, "Oh, okay." So basically, I was basically helping him, but he didn't try and figure that out. But he was kind of basically like thinking, "What am I going to do? What ball is coming next?" So just thinking about fields and trying to giving six balls and seeing what the batsman does, moving feet, how hard he goes at the ball. And I think once I've figured that out, then it's just a matter of time, I should say.
I'll tell you what, I like the answer, because when we talk to a lot of seam bowlers, it's a case of, you know, the overarching elements is making batsmen look a bit silly. okay, in terms of making off stumps flying out the ground, cartwheeling, or, you know, if you're an express seamer, it's bouncing them and almost intimidating batsmen. It's not often we speak to seam bowlers who talk about the methodical nature of the art form itself. That's usually spin bowlers. And you mentioned there about moving feet, Dane. I want to take a little peek inside the head of Dane Patterson's seam bowling talent here, okay? I just want to know the answer to this question. Let's say a batsman is coming down the track to you, okay? They're hitting you for fours, maybe the odd six. How do you personally combat that? Okay, do you put a little bit of extra pace on? Do you go to, you know, bringing the keeper up? Do you put a leg slip in, something like that? How do you combat a batsman coming down the track towards you, especially if they're having success?
Well, if it's one day cricket, then if he's going to do it again, then kudos to him. So I don't try and change anything, because if you're going to try and do it again, it might not work out. So to me, I keep things simple. So if I see you come down the wicket and hit me over my head, then I'm happy with that. If I get hit over my head or get driven past straight down the ground, I'm so happy with that. I can live with that. But if someone's trying to hack me over third man, or having a hack and Chinese cut through for four, then I could be the grumpiest man on the world. I basically, if you can do it once, you can do it again. That's my mindset that I have to a batsman, especially one day cricket. If you do it again, I'm like arrogant. If you hit me, if you can hit me over my head once, you can do it again. So to me, I'm like, show me again if you can do it. And I would be pitching balls on purpose to see if you could do it. But yeah, and then maybe it's just a rundown to third man. But I've had batsmen, especially in a four-day cricket, walk at me, and I've never had that. I've walked to Fletch, and Fletch asked me, like, what are you going to do? I said, I like people walking at me, and then I'd nick them off. And I've done it a couple of times last season, and Fletch was like, okay, Now I understand what you mean. So he like couldn't believe it. I was like, I like batsmen looking at me. And he was like, what? Looked at me like, whoa, what silly question, what silly answer is that? And I think three balls later, I think Wade Madsen, yeah. Because they were trying to walk at me. And I nicked him off. And Fletch was like, okay, I see what you mean.
Well, yeah, to be honest, I had the same confused and almost befuddled look on my face, because, again, the go-to answer is bring the keeper up, because, you know, you want to keep the batsman in the crease, because a lot of bowlers aren't comfortable with that. They want batsmen in the crease. They want to trap them LBW, I think, against Mohammed Abbas, just to name one bowler in particular, who's an absolute master of that. Same with Darren Stevens. If you bring the keeper up, you can keep the batsman trapped, but fair enough. So an aggressive bowler, to say the least, Dane. But I do have to ask, let's say they keep on getting continued success, right? And let's say they do have some streaks of luck, maybe a couple of dropped catches, maybe a couple of inside edges which fly down to the boundary. How do you maintain your composure? How do you keep cool in the heat of battle? Do you have any kind of mechanisms, coping strategies to maintain that even keel during a game?
I think sometimes I can be hard at it. Luckily, we have teammates in cricket, so lots of advice would be flying around. So if balls are flying around, I've had keepers stand up to me in one day cricket just to do that. So it's not something new. I think it's not something new to me, but if things are going chaotic, then bring the keeper up, some fielding changes. That's about it. We can only do so much things as a bowler when it comes to white ball cricket. So, I think I've learned a lot in England, especially with white ball cricket. Pitches are more flatter. Boundaries are smaller. So, I'm actually glad that I've experienced that part of county cricket.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Because, again, this is going to sound very cliche, but you live and you learn. every single time you go out there, you do, you know, if you have a bad game, you learn from it. That's all that you can do. It's going to happen. It's the nature of the beast in the game of cricket. You are going to have good games. You're going to have bad games. You're going to bowl well sometimes and get wickets. Other times you're going to bowl brilliantly and you're not going to get any reward. Okay. I think of Chris Wokes in the first test. I mean, he was absolutely outstanding, as was Ollie Robinson. And in that first session, England took one wicket after bowling tirelessly for 2 hours. So that is just how cricket is. Sometimes it can be frustrating, in particular when it's hot, it's a bit humid, you're bowling as fast as you can. But again, you just have to maintain your composure. All that you can do is bowl that ball and hope the batsman edges you, makes a mistake and gifts their wicket sometimes. But Dane, you alluded to it there, county cricket. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because we are the County Cricket Podcast, and that is the main emphasis of today's show. And the team that you play for in Nottinghamshire County Cricket Club, one of the biggest here in England and Wales. I mean, in the last decade alone, they've won each of the three trophies. They won the One Day Cup in 2017, and they're two times winners of the Blast in 17 and 2020 as well. So a massive club with a real pedigree and heritage about it. But before we get into the discussion about Notts as a club and your experiences in the 2021 season, what were your first memories of county cricket? Did you ever get the chance to follow it or watch it in South Africa itself? Or is this something which has been pretty recent to you?
Not actually. So I used to watch Rory Kleinfeld play for
the North Ants.
North Ants. And then, so we like actually have a group with myself, Dane Pete, Lazard Williams, and Aviwe. And like Dane would always send like clips of our Rory's bowling and things like that. So that's when I started following county cricket. And that was like my first like experience, like watching county cricket and that. And I've actually I had a chat with him and asked him like how's county cricket, and he said it's tough on a bowler, but I mean it's enjoyable, and that's what I experienced.
I think that's quite a nice way to describe it, to be honest, from Rory Kleinfeld, a fan favourite down at Wantage Road. He definitely is. Yep. What a character he was, to say the least. Also very, very frustrating at times with bat and ball in hand. Especially if you do support the opposition side. He just seemed to, you know, when the game was, I don't know, drifting away from North Ants, he'd bring them back into it somehow. That's what was so frustrating. He'd either hit like a massive six, give it a bit of torque to the bowler, and then, you know, it would set off a bit of a comeback for the steel backs, or it'd just get a wicket. He's just that kind of character.
I think he's the one that stood out was when he scored 100 against Notts in that Royal London Cup game. And he like tore his side, and Fletch always tells me, he says like he remembers Rory scoring 100, but he could just remember that when Rory tore his side, he thought he was in a zoo, because it felt like a lion was roaring because it was so sore, and he just kept on batting. Apparently he just kept on batting and smashing it. So
that doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah, a bit of a warrior, shall we say, Rory Kleinfeld. But that's interesting. And to be honest, I'm glad about that. And that is very, very good indeed. So it's not something overly recent. But before we talk about your time at Notts and your debut in 2021, I suppose we have to talk about the initial move which never actually materialised, which was 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So, Dane, how did that move materialise in the first place? Because I know back in South Africa, it did create quite a bit of media attention, because it was yet another cold pack deal. You'd just been playing against England, funnily enough, in the Test series. How did that initial move materialise? When were the initial moves made by Notts to try and, you know, bring you over here to play county cricket?
So funny enough, I think they took the international games away, and it was your first class games that counted now in limited overs in a year that you played. And obviously I played a lot for the Cobras, and then I got called up into the squad, and I heard like murmurs that Vern was going to retire on that series, and I thought like, okay, maybe this is my chance. to play for South Africa, like in the long term. And then my agent phoned me and said, Notts is offering you a callback deal. So I was like, oh, I'm stuck in the middle here. And let it go. And then I heard I'm playing my first test and I said no. Funny enough, I said no, first of all. and then played the two tests. And then after the two tests, got another call from my agent. And my agent said, Notts is still willing to have you. And I think I wasn't supposed to play the second test, but luckily it rained. It was the last test of the one. Just luckily it rained the day one and then day two. We like started like just after lunch, I think. And then TOS team was announced I'm playing. So then my agent phoned me after the test. It's like, look here, not just asking again, do you want to come? And then I said, yeah. And then I decided, okay, let's do this, because when I'm gonna have another chance to play county cricket, because I always wanted to play county cricket, talking to Rory and them. And I think I had stern chats with him also, because he said like I'd do well there and things like that. And I think there was one day where we were playing a 4-day game, the Cobras versus the Warriors, and we had dinner and then we met up with Robin Peterson. And I think we were just sitting there having a bottle of wine, and then all of a sudden another bottle of wine came, and then another bottle of wine came, and then we were like chilling, and the lady's like, okay, we're gonna close now. And then all of a sudden I just get this bollocking from Robin Peterson, and then bollocking from this side from Rory Kleinfeld, and they just said sign. And then yeah, I signed the contract and then couldn't come over because of COVID. And then, and then I came over this year.
Yeah. 2021. Yeah, it's been a long year, to be honest, Dane. I can relate to that. Definitely.
Yeah, long story short, I said no and then I said yes.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because I suppose we haven't really spoken massively about cold pack deals here on the podcast, because I suppose in the UK, depending on your county, it's not really a big deal. I mean, a county like Hampshire, for example, have had quite a few over the years. More recently, the likes of Riley Russo, the likes of Fidel Edwards, just to name a couple. And then other counties, sorry for bringing my county up, but Warwickshire, I think we've only ever had three, if I'm not mistaken, Vaughan van Jaarsveld, Paul Harris, and Grant Elliott. So depending on your county, you do have different, you know, outlooks on cold pack players. And you know, and feelings about them. In South Africa itself, the feeling is very negative, isn't it? I know that from speaking. I have the pleasure of knowing a lot of people in the country itself, but it's very, very frowned upon. And that's what I don't think people in England quite realise. Was that a really difficult decision for you to make, Dane? Because it was just after representing your country in Test cricket, which is the absolute pinnacle. And to be honest, you did quite well in the tests. It was a tough series for South Africa, England eventually winning 3-1, which I do remind my South African friends quite often about. But was that a really tough decision to make? Because although you'd had your heart set on county cricket, you'd had that counselling from Robin Peterson and Rory Kleinfeld. At that moment, obviously the pandemic kind of curtailed that, but at that moment, signing a cold pack deal, that would have been your international career completely over. Did you ever have any second doubts, any, you know, worries, concerns about signing that deal? Or was your heart always set on playing for Nottinghamshire?
Yeah, so I was in and out the national setup. I think played like, what, 3 ODIs, 7 T20s and 2 tests. I was in and out. I would play a game here and then not play another game, and then all of a sudden someone gets injured, I get called up. So I mean, it was very ebbs and flow type of how can I say, career. Short international career, but yeah, looking back in this year, I think I sat with Kevin Shine. I think I told him, I was like, I think this is the first time that I've really actually enjoyed playing cricket. Yeah. So I think that wave has just been going up and down. I mean, you get up and you're like, oh, like your body's stiff and you're like, oh, I don't feel for this day. And then you like get to motivate yourself again and stuff like that. And then, but I mean, I think a change was needed because I think I spent about how many years? I think from 2014 to 2019 with the Cobras. So I mean, things got a bit monotonous and things like that. So I think change was needed. I don't think I was going to be every time, every series in a national setup. So, I mean, I don't have any doubts about it. Not to this day where I think, oh, I should have just held on a bit more. But the thing is, since like I've been playing and I've got that experience of in and out, playing the test was like the pinnacle because I've learned so much in that short time that I've been part of that test side. And I think that just gave me not new vigor, but just I've learned more skills and just to be more patient and just know how to bowl on a test arena. And I think that helped me a lot. So yeah, I'm actually grateful that Mick Neal and Notts came back to me.
I'll tell you what, Dane, that really was a lovely answer. I have to say.
And also, I don't know why me signing a Colpack brought so much media attention, because I actually had a chuckle. I was like, why is there so much media attention around me that doesn't even play for my country 24/7? So, I mean, like, I was actually having a massive chuckle by myself. So yeah.
Well, I think in that regard, it was probably because it had been going on for years with regards to South African talent coming over to the UK. And it's probably the timing. I'm just trying to look from the other side, Dane. But having heard that, when you said you've almost got this new vigour about your cricket and the move to Notts, clearly no regrets, and there shouldn't be. You're absolutely fantastic in your first season. 54 championship wickets, 16 in white ball cricket as well. It's been quite the debut season, I have to admit, and I think you've become a firm fan favourite at Trent Bridge already. So that is wonderful to hear. As the host of the County Cricket Podcast, that has brought an absolutely massive grin to my face. The fact that you've said that, it's almost given you some new life to your cricket career, because that's what county cricket should be about. Enjoying your cricket, enjoying it with your teammates, your friends, and you know what, just giving it your all. Because county cricket is, it's brilliant. It's so good. It really is. Obviously, I'm biased because I'm the host of the County Cricket Podcast. I follow county cricket up and down the country, but there's just something so special about it. The cricket itself, the friendships that you create, whether that's with fans or players, the camaraderie that you have as well. There's nothing quite like county cricket. There really isn't. But I'll stop with the monologue about how much I love county cricket. I'll save that for another podcast, Dane. I don't want to bore you. But no, it's a fantastic, fantastic system and one which deserves to be loved, in my personal opinion. But in terms of your experiences then, so from 2020, almost the phantom deal because it never materialized as a result of the COVID pandemic, we go to 2021, which was this year, may I just add. But in terms of your debut, so making your first ever professional start for Nottinghamshire County Cricket Club against my county of Warwickshire, I have to ask, what was going through your head on that day when you first stepped out onto that field as a player for Nottinghamshire County Cricket Club?
Well, lots of nerves, because I just wanted to do well. So that's like kind of me when I stepped into a new team and things like that. And I just wanted to like do well. And I think it was after lunch, the first innings where the game was just flowing nicely, where Sam Ain and Lamb was like taking their time and batting quite well. And then I got Ain out and then Lamb and then I think Burgess. I think that game just opened up there a bit. And then And then basically the same went for us in our batting. So, yeah, but got to face Ollie Stone for the new second rock. As you can see, I was a moving target. So, luckily, I said, I'm going to be a moving target here. I think second innings, I did that. And then, then we batted, and then I think they were chasing about 340. We bowled quite well. And then I think the wicket just flattened out. And then, yeah.
It was a good game of cricket, wasn't it, Dane?
That was a very good game of cricket. I think that game actually opened my eyes, because tea time in South Africa, we take early tea, the game's not going to produce a result. And I think out of nowhere, a result just happened. And I think that's the form of county cricket. You're never out of it. So, I mean, that I learned that quite quickly. And it's always good to be a part in those games. I know it was a tough loss, and we were quite close to winning the first game in how many days. And I think, like, just snatching it at the end, just like, it was tough, because that dressing room was quite quiet. And from that game and from the Worcester game, where Slats and Hasabulla batted like for 6 hours, I think. after those two games, I think we got a character about ourselves, and then we just kept on going after the first win.
Yeah, they certainly did. To be fair, it was incredible. That almost was the catalyst, wasn't it? Because it was the very next game against Derbyshire. Yeah. It was the East Midlands Derby. Yeah. Absolutely destroyed Derbyshire. Really, really one-sided game. I think not to one by an innings, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Stuart Broad, you know, did what Stuart Broad does best and completely tore through Derbyshire's batting lineup on that day. But just going back to that debut, yeah, it was a pretty good game of cricket. For those who don't know how that game panned out, it almost was this slugfest between Warwickshire and Notts, and then all of a sudden we lost a load of wickets, and Tim Bresnan and Ollie Stone are out there. There's four wickets to go. I think theirs was the seventh wicket on that day, and they put on 113 runs.
Did he come in? I think Ollie Stone came in for night watchman. Yeah, and then good old Danny Briggs, old savior.
Or did he? No, Ollie Stone came in because Sibley was injured.
Yes,
he broke his hand in that game. Because he dropped a catch at first slip and broke his right hand. So Stone had to come in.
Yeah, and then we were taken back, and then Brisbane and Danny Briggs to the rescue.
Not for the first time we've said that as Warwickshire fans this season. I think of Danny Briggs' final game of the year. We needed that one extra batting bonus point to ensure that we'd go above Lancs. And he hits a six. I mean, Danny Briggs, fantastic signing and a great season for my beloved Warwickshire. But again, we're not going to spend too much time talking about the Bears in a Nottinghamshire focused podcast. But Dane, in that particular game, you mentioned three of your wickets already. You didn't just take three wickets, though. You took six in total. Do you remember who your other three wickets were in that game?
I know my first county wicket was Tim Bresnan. Don't know what happened to that ball. I was surprised. Just that took off. What else was there? The opening bowler. Tall lad.
Yep.
Yeah. What else was there? Did I get Danny Briggs out? No.
Nope, you have already mentioned him. You got one of those first batsmen out twice.
Tim.
Nope.
Then out. Burgess.
Yes. Yep. So in terms of your wickets, Dane, you got Michael Burgess twice, Tim Bresnan, Oliver Hannon-Dorby. He was the 6'7" seamer. one of our favourites here at the Counter Cricket Podcast, aka the Owl. Lovely. Matt Lovely Lamb Ned. And Sam Hain. I remember the ball to Sam Hain as well. I remember that and just being in pain. Because I thought we were, you know, that was the moment that I thought, oh, we're going to collapse here. We're going to collapse. Yeah. And then we did collapse. And then fortunately, yeah. Brezen and Ollie Stone came to our rescue. But what a fantastic debut that is. Obviously a very memorable occasion, a fantastic game of cricket. And yeah, it was the catalyst, I suppose, for Notts to, you know, get on that winning streak and eventually make Division One. So yeah. In terms of that debut, Dane, this might be a tough question, actually. Okay. But in terms of that wicket at Trent Bridge, was it difficult to adapt to county cricket from the get-go? Or did you find the transition quite smooth? Because you alluded to it beforehand, county wickets at some grounds are a lot flatter than they are in South Africa. There's a lot less bounce and a lot more movement as well. You'll notice that due to the Duke's ball and overcast conditions. Did you find it difficult initially to adapt your game to English conditions, English wickets, or did you find it quite easy per se?
Not easy, but
it's never easy.
It's never easy. I would be lying if I said it's easy. I think I was a bit brave by just going up half a foot fuller, and I just kept on hitting the deck. I didn't look to swing the ball.
That's interesting. Why didn't you, out of interest? Because in England, you know, there's quite a bit of swing. Why did you look not to swing it?
Because the Duke ball was swinging a lot when I started bowling with it. And I think that's not the way to go in England. Just putting it on the platter for the batters. I just looked to nip. Just looked to nip the ball. So I think also Brody also said, like, that's why overseas players don't do well, especially in test matches at Trent Bridge, because they, especially bowling with the Dukes, they look to swing it and just float it up there, where you said you just have to hit the deck. So I think wise few words from old Brody.
Yeah, over 500 test wickets, been playing at Trent Bridge for years as well. Probably best to heed his advice, to be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. That is pretty cool as well. You know, your first ever game for Notts, you got to share it with a certain Stuart Broad, who doesn't play often for Notts either, due to England commitments. So, yeah.
That's like that's what I also liked about it, because whenever he was free, he would avail himself, and which is quite cool, I think. It keeps him going. And I think like watching actually this year, I think it's actually like put a yard or two of pace also.
He does seem to have. I agree with that. You know, balls which used to be 84 mile an hour, they're now ticking over to 85, 86, which is strange because he's getting, he's in his mid 30s now. But it comes back to that old adage. You know, you can teach an old dog new tricks sometimes. And Stuart Broad, again, it's all about being adaptable. And he has done that very, very well in his game.
Yeah.
But Dane, I have to talk about another same bowler at Notts who isn't Stuart Broad. And I think you know exactly who I'm talking about here. It is, of course, Luke Fletcher. The leading wicket taker in this year's championship, had an absolutely ludicrous season, didn't he? 66 wickets for Notts. I mean, yourself, you had 54. Between you, 120 wickets. That's not fair. Okay, that just is not fair for opposition batting lineups. But what were your initial, I don't know, reactions to meeting Luke Fletcher for the first time? What were your first impressions of you know, his character, of the type of cricketer he was? What did you first make of Luke Fletcher?
So, again, I spoke to Rory and he said, you are going to love Luke Fletcher. I was doing isolation in the academy house there at Lady Bay. for 5 days, and then he would like come and knock on the door and say, how's it? And the first time I met him, I was like, okay, we were like first like okay, finally you're here, feeling each other out, testing each other out. And then obviously they played warm-up games and that, and I was just watching, because I just came back. I tore my pec in last year October, end of October, so I had surgery, so I was still like bowling. I didn't play any like cricket for like 18 months, so I was busy with Kevin Shine at the Nets while they were playing warm-up games, and just missed the first game against Durham. And he said, the next game you'll play against Warwickshire. And then just like being in the dressing room and like just talking to Luke, and I think we had a few beers after the Durham game, and then I think like everything just went off there, and then everything just, it's like a burning bush, it just went.
Well, I'll tell you what, you two have given us some fantastic, fantastic performances in 2021, yeah, to say the least. But I have to ask, Dane, because when we look at other cricketing bromances, okay, let's have a look at Marcus Stoinis, Adam Zampa, for example. Yeah. We have Zoinis, okay? What do we call Dane Patterson and Luke Fletcher? What's the bromance name?
The bromance name?
Fletcherson.
That's not bad. Fletcherson.
Yeah.
Fletcherson. Bad.
Just trying to think of any other ones.
I think me and him, we used to, the first time he took me, I think that was also the Durham game. And me and him, we went to the kebab shop. He bought me this huge kebab, lamb kebab, at 11:30 in the evening, I remember. Me, him, and Alex Hales in the kebab shop eating this big old lamb kebab. And he still wanted to throw my kebab away because I had half of it. So I told him, no, are you mad? I need this tomorrow morning because I'm going to be waking up with a headache. So I'm going to have this kebab and coffee. And every time when we're tired, I think, and we want to have a chuckle, there's a kebab shop right there by Trent Bridge, and the guy's name that owns it is Uzi. So you can imagine 11:30, Luke Fletcher walking in, hey, Uzi, sort my friends out here with lamb kebabs, please. Don't worry. And I was just thinking, what? Who is this guy? And I'm laughing. And I was like, oh my gosh. And he ordered like three of this guava juice or so.
Is it Rubicon? In a can?
Rubicon. Yeah. Can I get three guava Rubicon, please? And he's like, he was helping, the guy Uzi was helping people, and he just like stopped dead in his tracks, and he just went straight to the lamb, started cutting, filling it, and then poof, and people's looking at us. So yeah, that's my first fond memory of Luke Fletcher. So like, whenever we are tired and stuff, and you'll just hear on the field, hey, Uzi! And you got Joe Clark also screaming from slip, hey, Uzi! And then you'll just see Fletch like get into another gear, and then, yeah.
Right, I'll tell you what, Dane, before recording today's podcast, I couldn't have ever even imagined talking about yourself, Alex Hales and Luke Fletcher in a kebab shop in Durham at 11:30 at night. But here we are. That's why we love the podcast so much. And
not in Durham, in Notts.
In Nottingham. Yeah, oh, Nottingham. Of course, yeah. First game was in Nottingham, yeah, with
yeah.
with a fella called Uzi. But there we go.
Yeah.
That is why we love the podcast so much, you know, for stories like that. That is county cricket summed up as well. I don't think you'd get those same stories with Premier League footballers, to say the least.
Yeah.
That's what's great about county cricket, though. It is the characters. I mean, Luke Fletcher just, you know, he personifies county cricket and what's good about county cricket. Same with someone like a Chris Rushworth or a Darren Stevens.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are what make county cricket, okay? Because they've got a little bit more personality, character. They're not just cricketers, you know, they're normal people who are very good at the game of cricket. So fair enough, Dane, I like that.
Yeah, it's good to have characters like that in your a county circuit. I mean, you sometimes think you're playing at a one day game where he's on a hat trick standing by his mark, and all of a sudden he turns to Radcliffe Road and he starts doing this clap, like, and starting his now jump or long jump, and all of a sudden you just see the whole Trent Bridge running in, and I'm like, who is this guy? Is it right to play 4-day cricket like this?
It's Luke Fletcher. He can do whatever he likes. He runs yeah. Nottingham at this point. You might as well call him Robin Hood. But honestly, fantastic, fantastic character. Great cricketer as well. Hopefully one day, fingers crossed, we'll get him on the podcast. That needs to happen. Luke, if you're listening, this needs to happen. Okay, we need to learn more about Uzi and his kebab shop as well. And who knows, you could maybe hook us up with some as well. I don't mind lamb kebab from now on, now and again.
That lamb kebab got him like 60-odd wickets.
Yeah, I need some. I need some of that. I only took about 10 this year. Crikey. No, fair play to him. And yeah, a very, very memorable season for both yourself and Fletch, Dane. Yeah. And this is going to be a tough question because obviously your debut would have been incredibly special. It is for any cricketer stepping out onto that field for the first time. Notts also did very well in the T20 Blast. You had a great Division 1 run as well in the Championship. What would you say was your real highlight from your time at Trent Bridge in 2021? Was there a particular moment which really stands out to you from a personal perspective?
Definitely winning the first game against Derbyshire. I think I haven't experienced not winning a game for, I don't know how many days.
Nearly
I
2 years. Was,
yeah, nearly 2 years. That's long. So once we did that, it was quite like, I could see it was like this mental wall just collapsing in everybody's eyes. Especially like the experienced guys who've experienced it. I think like it was one of my goals also to, like, how can I say, be there when they win a game or just do something just to win a game, if it's just breaking a partnership or something like that. So I was quite happy to be there. So I think that was a quite special moment. But I think, like, the team itself, that stayed with me, basically. Because like I was sitting on the plane and like thinking like what do I tell people? Like if people ask me now, like yourself, what was your special moment about county cricket? And I would say the team, because like we were such a close-knit unit. If we would lose, win, draw, I mean, like we would just be there. Like everybody would just be chilling, have a beer and things like that, and as a chill. And I think we had the best spot there, Trent Bridge, sitting in the exec members, so that big window there, and I was sitting in front. And there's like after a 4-day game, if you win, and I'm like sitting with a Peroni or Stella, and just like looking at the sun setting on Trent Bridge, and be like, right, this is what it's all about. So I think that's the special moment. I think it's also like, I also don't want to be like get left behind the culture, because I wanted to be like more in their faces and getting relationships with all the guys. I think obviously I had chats to Stephen Mullaney, Ben Duckett I played against before, and so I knew him at like just the other lads, just getting to know them, I think. So I got a lot of close-knit lads there in Notts.
Honestly, Dane, I really like that answer. I'd imagine for any Notts fans listening to the podcast, they'll be smiling right now. That really is excellence here. We love to hear that on the podcast when an overseas player almost adapts like a duck to water. I think that's how I'd describe your experiences at Trent Bridge so far. The togetherness as well, so, so important in any sport to have that real team dynamic. And I think it's pretty clear by that description that definitely does exist at Nottinghamshire County Cricket Club. So that is fantastic here as well. And in terms of your experiences, okay, we've spoken there about the high moments. There were a couple of low moments as well. I can think of one game, the T20 Blast quarterfinal. How difficult was that for you to take personally?
I was gutted because probably 8 out of 10. I should be hitting that for 6. But yeah, it's just one of those days, and I felt gutted because I felt like leading the team down and things like that. So I was quite like gutted and probably like sat with a towel over my head for like 6 or 7 minutes, like just being on my own and just be like, oh, and hitting the desk. And because you mean like you're so close, and like I knew I could play that ball, and I was just waiting for the right moment because I knew, yeah, is a moment coming, and then that was the moment, and yeah. Yeah. But that's sports.
It is. Exactly. Because, and you know what? Sometimes you're going to have those games where it goes against you, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, look at the weekend with Lewis and Max.
Yeah. Very, very good example, that. In fact, we're on an F1 podcast, but are you happy that Max won, or would you have preferred Lewis?
I'm actually a Lewis fan, so yeah.
Top man.
But yeah, I mean, it was a good battle.
Exactly. And you know what, again, that is sport sometimes. It does break your heart, trust me. I know that from 2012 with Warwickshire, Kabir Ali defending that final ball. 2016, Carlos Brathwaite, who now plays for my county of Warwickshire, scoring those 4 sixes. Remember the name.
Remember the name.
I don't think I'm ever going to forget it, to be completely honest, because of that performance in Eden Gardens. But I'll tell you what, again, what a ridiculous game of cricket that was. And Brad Wheel has been on the podcast. Okay, he's a favourite of ours here. Lovely, lovely fella. And you know what? He does do that from time to time, Dane. 2016, he did it against Sussex. He did it against Ross Taylor. So don't feel bad about it. And to be honest, it's not your role. I know that, you know, it was getting very, very close at the end. But as a tail ender, you're there to take wickets. You'd already taken 3 wickets in the game. It's not up to you to do everything. That's all I'd say.
Yeah. So, I was just, like I say, 8 out of 10 times that should have been in McNeil's office. So,
Well, who knows? 2022, Dane. It might be. You might get another chance. I mean, not a ridiculously strong white ball outfit. In my opinion, and many people's opinions, definitely one of the best in the country, if not the very best. Especially since 2017. They've been absolutely ridiculous in the quarterfinals every single year, basically. Winning in 2020, coming very close this year as well. Yeah, they are a very, very good white ball side, to say the least. And an improving red ball side. So some very, very exciting times. Well, for me, up at Trent Bridge, not down at Trent Bridge, but up at Trent Bridge for the Nottinghamshire faithful. And before we talk about 2022 then, Dane, I just want to get one final wrap-up of your experiences in 2021, because 54 wickets in your first season in county cricket, that's more than Simon Harmer, by the way, who's been here since 2017. It's not often that an overseas player takes more than Simon Harmer in county cricket. How would you put the 2021 season into your own words? How would you go about doing that?
Well, just down to hard work, I guess. I think mention must go to Kevin Shine, because he was like my Mr. Miyagi.
Nice reference.
I'm quite the laid back kind of guy, and he's quite if you do your work, he'll be on your side. But there was a time where I was lacking a bit. And then he like pulled me aside and he's like, listen, I don't like this. He like just gave me a bollocking where I looked at him. I was like, okay, this is not a guy to mess with. And like harsh words were said, and I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden I just started working, like going to gym and things like that. And then all of a sudden our relationship just went upwards, and then we started working well together. And then, and then for the first half, he watched me bowl. And then second half of the, or just before the second half, before the Royal London, he just started to unlock me, just getting my rhythm, my strides, because I used to have a little trickle before I used to jump. And we got rid of that. And then, I mean, after that, things just started happening. So I think basically due to hard work, because I think like as a bowler, you'd like look at the person telling you do this and do that, and you're like thinking, oh, I'm 32 years old, I've gotten to where I am now. And I looked at him, he's like, you're looking at me like I can't do it. He's like, I'm going to show you I can do it. Then I went up to him. I was like, Shiny, you did it. And he's like, I told you I was going to do it. And then he tells me, I can do more next season. I was like, what? Surely not. He's like, you watch. So yeah.
Goodness, that's ominous for any opposition batting lineups out there. More, just the 54 wickets. Yeah, goodness me. Not looking forward to that if you're a Division 2 batsman next season. But it is important, you know, sometimes, and this goes for cricketers at all levels, okay, but in particular bowlers, sometimes you do have to set aside the ego, because even though you've done really well up until that point, you can always improve. There's always new things that you can learn. I mean, we've spoken to 40-plus-year-old veterans here on the podcast who say that even up until their final season, you could still learn, you could still improve. Great example of this, Alan Richardson, at the age of 36, became Wisden Cricketer of the Year in county cricket. 36 years of age. He'd been playing since the 90s. So you can always improve. You can always learn. And the key thing is just to not be dismissive of advice. Yeah. Obviously, it's going to hurt sometimes. I imagine that Kevin Shine, in that initial outburst, that was quite hurtful, weren't it, Dane? In terms of that initial reaction. But look what it's, you know, look what it's produced. 54 wickets. It's remarkable.
I couldn't believe it. I wasn't even thinking about 50 wickets when I came. First of all, I just like to do well and probably like get a 5 a year and there, and then got a 5 on a lovely edge bastard flat wicket.
I was there. For yes. That.
And then we started playing these four games, and then I think the closer we got to winning it, I just think my mind took over. I think I was in the third game I was bowling with a bit of a back spasm against Hampshire, and then I think we had a week break before Lancashire against Lancs. Then what was the last game? Was Lancs the last game?
Yorkshire.
So, yeah, it was. But I'm thinking now, we played, was it Lancs first, then Hampshire? I think so. Whatever. But against Hampshire, I was bowling with, it was like a back spasm, and then just got 70% fit. Bowling against Yorkshire, and then it kept up, and then got through the game, and then which is actually funny enough, because one game I would run through a wall, next game Fletch would run through a wall, following game against the Lancs Brett Hutton runs through a wall. So that was like the characters that we had in the team. So, and then found out that I had like bone stress on my L5. So, yeah.
Crikey. Yeah, they're always horrible injuries.
Yeah. Got to say thank you to James Piper, all the anti-inflammatories that kept you on the field.
Goodness me, the trials and tribulations of a fast bowler, eh?
So, yeah, I mean, 50 wasn't on the cards, but when I started taking wickets and then I got closer to it, I think I was on 46, 47 the last game. And then, yeah, Harry Duke, yeah, on the stroke of lunch.
I'll tell you what, not bad. I keep on coming back to it, but what a season. What an absolutely extraordinary first season. So often we get that in county cricket, you know. I mean, Simon Harmer was one of those who just broke through, immediate impact, immediate success, has dominated county cricket ever since joining Essex in 2017. But crikey, yeah, as I keep on referring to, Division 2 next year, I do not fancy, you know, being one of those batting lineups, to say the least. And
I don't want to put a jinx on it, but yeah, I'm not the goals-orientated guy where I say I want to do 50 wickets and things, because if I don't get to it, I'd like, get frustrated because my mind is on that. I think I just take week by week. So that's me. I'm quite a laid back guy. And I think I think that's what China didn't like about me. He put that quickly to the sword and said, listen here, mister, you can't come roam around here and stuff, just bowl. I want you in the gym.
Well, it paid off though, Dane. That's what you got to think. It most certainly paid off. And it's funny you mentioned 2022, because before we go on to our concluding segment, which is teammates, which today will be about 5-6 questions for Dane to answer about his teammates at Trent Bridge. But before we jump the gun and go on to that final segment, we have to talk a little bit about 2022, because it's not that far away now. It's basically 3 months until pre-season, 4 months until the season proper gets underway. Yeah. So we're not in Division 2. You've got the Royal Under One Day Cup. You've got the T20 Blast as well. I know just there, Dane, you've said you don't have individual milestones, but from a team perspective, what would you like to achieve heading into next season at Trent Bridge?
I think it's always nice to win silverware. It would be nice to win a cup in my county career. So I think that would be nice for next year. I'm not saying which one, because I don't want to put a jinx on it. So one of the three is good enough. But I mean, looking forward to 2022, I think the one thing that I was impressed about at Notts was the youngsters, your Lyndon James, your Joey Everson, your Liam Patterson White. I think James Haynes, Hazy now, that came through. Toby Pettman. I think those youngsters are one for the future. I think back they work quite hard, and I think just giving some value to them in 2022 would be my goal, because Sheepers, I was actually taken back to hear how young Joey Everson was and playing like that, and I was like, Sheepers, you're joking. It's like, is this lad 19? It's like,
yes, he is. Well, he was.
Yeah, I think he is 20. He just turned 20. Yeah. I mean, even Lyndon James also and Liam Patterson White, I was like, well, these guys really like 22. Like, you're having a laugh. They look like they've been playing county cricket. Like, I think the first I played a preseason game against the Warwickshire Twos. Yeah. And then James was captain, and then he scored at 147, and then the rest was history. And I think since he got that stress fracture, I mean, he also like got important wickets where he would just come and then roll through people, and then just a pity he got that stress fracture.
Yeah, it definitely is. But I'll tell you what, Lyndon James, again, what a talent. We mention his name so many times on the podcast, the Worksop Wonder Kid, as they're known at Trent Bridge, and what an apt nickname that is. But you've got Lyndon James, Joey Everson, who absolutely clobbers a cricket ball. I saw him in the Under-19 World Cup. When he hits a ball, it stays hit. It's going to clear the boundary rope. He's a very, very powerful young batsman. You've got Fatty Singh as well, who really impressed in the One Day Cup. Liam Patterson White, who we've had on the podcast, very impressive. The future looks bright, doesn't it, Dane?
It does. It does. And I think as a coaching staff, I think we're quite privileged to have a coaching staff like that at the moment. I think first time working under Peter Moores, Peepers, what a man. What a man. And I think Shiny, my fellow South Africans, Rooster, and Anthony Porter, the left arm seamer. He calls himself a spinner. even Paul Franks, the general. What a man. So privileged to have a good backroom staff like at the Trent Bridge.
Absolutely, yeah. It does make all the difference. And it's funny you mentioned a couple of names there. One of those may be coming onto the podcast in the new year, but I'm not going to spoil it on today's episode, but listeners do keep an eye out for that one. But Dane, I think it goes without saying, right, we here at the County Cricket Podcast wishing both yourself and Notts as a club all the best of luck heading into next season. I mean, if 2021 is anything to go off of, it'll probably be another good year for the East Midlands County and yourself.
Yeah.
yeah, just wishing you all the best of luck, mate. I mean, I've got absolutely no doubt you're going to be causing all sorts of issues for opposing batting lineups. I've got no doubt that Notts will be very strong in the T20 Blast North group yet again. And you beat us once this year, didn't you? Absolutely smashed us at Edgbaston. So hopefully we can rectify that in 2022. But no, I think the future looks bright. It's almost around the corner as well, so not long to go. But yeah, wishing yourself and Notts all the best of luck, mate. Wishing you the best.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Dane. But that isn't quite where we end today's podcast, because you know here, it's TCCP tradition. And in fact, Dane, you're going to be our only one this year. You're our final interview, I think, for 2021. This is big. So this means this year, Dane, you get our special Christmas teammates, which is quite good, to be honest.
Right.
So just for the listeners out there, I've got five questions for Dane, all about the teammates that he shares a dressing room with at Trent Bridge. But as it's Christmas teammates, there might be a little bit of a festive twist, shall we say. So Dane Patterson, are you ready for TCCP Christmas teammates?
Right. I think so.
Fantastic. First one, it is teammates, so we have to go with an instant classic. But Dane, who is the teacher's pet at Trent Bridge? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Oh, jeepers. Well, the person that I've always seen hanging around the coaches, it's definitely Stephen Mullaney, the skipper. He is the skipper, so I don't know if he has to be there, but when he's done batting, he's still speaking to the coaches. So, Stephen Mullaney.
Fair enough. Definitely fits the description based off of that then. Moving on to our next one, Dane, the first of our Christmas-themed questions for today. I always like this one. Who's the team Grinch? Who at Trent Bridge absolutely hates Christmas? Who doesn't celebrate, you know, doesn't put the Christmas songs on? Who is the Grinch at Nottinghamshire?
Oh, wow. Well, I saw this week Ben Slater has two Christmas trees, Christmas lights in his kitchen, and Christmas lights outside, and Christmas lights in his living room, so he's not the Grinch. I tell you, might not have a Christmas tree, and I think that would be Jake Paul, because the only Christmas thing that he'll be wearing is probably a jumper or something, because his house is not finished built yet, so...
Oh, that's unlucky. That is unlucky.
His house renovations. I wanted to say Liam Patterson White. Wanted to say Liam Patterson White, but he has a Christmas tree.
So the reason Jake Ball is the Grinch is because his house is getting renovated and he can't. Oh, that's unlucky. I feel for Jake, to be honest.
He's the Grinch.
Fantastic, Dane. I like that answer. Wasn't expecting it, to be honest, because he was having house renovations, but hey, fair enough.
If I'm looking through the dressing room, Jake Paul. Sorry, mate.
Fair enough. Hey, got to choose who you got to choose. Oh, and that actually relates lovely to this next one. Dane, you're going to have to give someone some credit here. And at the same time, throw someone under the bus. Because this is, of course, the classic, who's the best and worst dressed at Trent Bridge? Oh. Who's got some absolutely terrible clothing?
Oh, that's so funny. Best dress, Joe Clark's up there. Yeah, Joe Clark. Worst dress. Oh. My good old friend, Fletcher.
Really?
My good old friend. Yeah. He even says it himself. He even said it himself. I always remember him. Jeans, white Adidas, Continentals with polo, golf t-shirts. And in actual fact, he walks around, like when we go on away trips, he'll stay with his travelling gear.
Oh, crikey.
He says he doesn't bring any clothes with. He just brings his training clothes with, the cricket clothes. And that is like, I'm here to play cricket, boys. So we have done in the team room. He'll sit there with his other shorts and his golfer. And he'll have a beer and a pizza. And he says, right, boys, I'm out. So there's something about him and golfers. So if anybody wants to buy Luke Fletcher, the present is a golfer. He'll love you. He'll love you for that.
We might have to get him one to get him on the podcast. Yeah. That's what we'll do.
Yes.
Fletch, if you come on, I will personally hand deliver you one at Trent Bridge next season. Yes. But goodness.
Sorry, my good old friend.
It is brutal. It's always a funny question, but my word.
Even Brett Hutton puts in effort when there's number ones being put on. So, I mean, Hutton, you don't get a lot out of old Hutsy.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing Luke Fletcher in all of his training gear. That reminds me, you know, a couple of years ago, I was out shopping at a local Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
And I bumped into a certain Ian Bell in his Warwickshire tracksuit, full Warwickshire tracksuit. That's just reminded me of that. Sorry. I know that's completely off topic, but you do get that with county cricketers. Yeah.
The first away trip, I asked him, Fletch, did you forget your casuals? He's like, no, this is how I always. I'm like, what? It's like, I'm here to play cricket, not here to go out. So I was like, oh, okay. And then through to his word, next away trip, I was like, Fletch, no. Surely.
Hey, you know what though? Fair play. You know what? There's nothing wrong with that, I suppose. And he's got sound reasoning as well.
Yeah.
He is there to play cricket, you'd hope.
Yeah.
As a county cricketer.
Well, he was there.
Yeah, he certainly was this season. Yeah, just the 66 wickets. We'll keep bringing it up. But this next one then, our penultimate question, Dane, for today's podcast, very much Christmas related. Who's the most likely to want a cricket bat as a Christmas present? Who's the absolute badger at Trent Bridge?
Well, definitely Liam Paterson-White. He would definitely want a cricket bat for Christmas because in that corner, in the exec members where he sits there all day, doesn't move an inch after he bowls. Can you believe it? I think on the last day, he got three new bats from GM, and we all looked at him and were like, what are you going to do with these bats? He's like, these are my preseason bats. And me and Ben Slater looked at each other, preseason bats? You got to be kidding me. And you can imagine Ben Slater, this Chesterfield accent coming through, and it just had a go at him. And I just laughed at Slater. It's like, what are you doing? And Slater's like, look at my preseason bet. I don't see me getting bets. And we all like just had a chuckle. And so, yeah, that's the man that wants a cricket bet.
Hey, fair enough. I'll tell you what, he's a good lad, is Liam. But three preseason bats. He's not even an opener.
No, we couldn't believe it. He's like, yeah, this is for preseason. I was like, what? He's like, I couldn't believe it. He just kept on getting bets. Like, you'd break a bat, and then gets more bats from GM. Breaks a bat, another bat. Like, what's going on here?
Might need to stop breaking his bats.
Oh, yeah. Like, we're like, stop breaking your bats. It's like, I can't help it. So we're like, oh.
I like that answer, Dane. Hey, fair play. So Liam Paterson-White, most likely to want a bat for Christmas. And our final one, Dane. Because I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is just finished. We do have this cyclical nature here on the podcast. It's either I'm a Celebrity or the other one is a certain reality show called Love Island. So because I'm a Celebrity is finished, we'll end on an absolute classic. I know it's not exactly Christmassy, but who in the Nottinghamshire dressing room would be the most likely to appear on Love Island?
Oh, Joe Clark will definitely put his name in there. And old Tommy Moores.
That's what I was going to say.
I can see Tommy Moores on Love Island, definitely, just chilling, being himself. I could definitely see the two of them.
I would definitely agree. You know, when I thought that question, immediately my head went Tom Moores. Immediately. Yeah. You know, yeah. with the hair. You know, he's got some decent style as well. I think he could, you know, carry himself quite well on Love Island. Yeah.
Him and Joe Clark and running with a close...
Third close, is Luke Fletcher.
No, Fletch. Fletch would walk in and be like, what am I doing here? Cheers. running in a close third would probably be Ben Duckett.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Third, Ben Duckett. But he'll probably get... thrown, he'll probably get voted out the first week.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Dane. Three good choices there, I must admit. Yeah. Fair enough, quite a few. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Fingers crossed for Notts fans. None of them will be on Love Island.
But another one.
Oh, go on.
Lyndon James in number four.
Yeah. God, you're making the Love Island 11 at this point, Dane.
Yeah, I am, actually. I am.
We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see, you know.
Yeah. And see, yeah.
Has there ever been a cricketer on Love Island? I mean, I'm the one who asks these questions. I don't watch it myself.
Who's the guy that had always got the hot girls? This year, he used to play for the England disability team.
Hugo.
There we go.
Hugo Hammond.
Yeah, there's your cricketer.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, that shows my Love Island knowledge. That's why I'm not the Love Island connoisseur.
he was the guy that played that audacious Ramshot in Dubai. It was him.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, my goodness, that was this year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Crikey.
He's a cricketer.
We'll have to wait and see then for the future. Yeah. Obviously, not during a season. Okay, we don't want, you know, imagine that for an absence. For an absence, Lyndon James in brackets. Gone to Love Island. I don't think that would go down well with the Nottinghamshire faithful, but we'll have to wait and see. Who knows? In the future, we could see a Nottinghamshire player on Love Island. But Dane, I think that is a fantastic way to wrap up what has been a thoroughly entertaining podcast. You know, I've waited a long time to do this. We've wanted you on the podcast for a while. And let's just say it's paid off. You know, good things come to those who wait. And I'm certainly getting that feeling with today's episode. So, Dane, before we say our goodbyes, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, not really.
Not even your Twitter?
My Twitter's, I think my handle's Dane Patterson 44. I think that's my Instagram handle's Dane Pat 44. Yeah. So yeah, that's me on the socials. Click the follow button if you don't want to. No problem.
Well, fair enough, Dane. I think that is a fantastic way to wrap up. And of course, to our listeners out there, if you want to go and follow Dane, we will leave the links to those in the podcast description below. So please feel free to give him a follow, you know, check the progress before the 2022 season and, strap yourselves in for what I think is going to be a very, very fun season in 2022 here in England and Wales. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the Counter Cricket Podcast. For today's episode, to all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.